Blog Talk Radio.
To another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm one of your two hosts, Jason Ophir, along with Sherry Pang. Sherry, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. I'm hanging in there. Just caught a bug, but I'm okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. You know, I work in the medical field, and it seems like everybody's sick, and I've been expecting to get sick, and the other day I started to get a sore throat, but it only lasted for like about an hour. I was getting paranoid. I caught the flu, and I must have beat it. I don't know. I must have a super immune system. So it's too bad. Hope you feel better. And so we got a great guest tonight. We got Mike Nolley. He's a volunteer with Share International, a nonprofit magazine that's read over in 70 countries. He reports on the progress of the emergence of Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius, and his priorities, which is a realization by humanity of our divine nature, world peace, restoration of the environment, and the sharing of the world's resources. So we're going to bring him on in a second. I want to invite any listeners out there, if you want to call in and ask Mike any questions, you can call into the show at 215-383-3999. It's 215-383-3999. We look forward to anybody that is out there that has any questions. So we'll go ahead and bring him on. I have been so busy this week, I haven't been looking into any paranormal stories out there. So I'm really not up on the news. So we're going to bring him on right now, and let's learn a little bit about Maitreya. Hey, Mike. Are you there, Mike? Oh.
Hello.
Hey, Mike.
Here I am.
Hey, I hit the wrong button. My bad. How are you doing?
No problem. I'm doing well.
Awesome. I'll just kind of give the floor to you to kind of explain everybody who you are and Maitreya and all that.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Mike Nolley. I'm a volunteer with Share International. I'm one of a significant group of volunteers who are doing the work of spreading the information about Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom. I'm willing to wager that this is some of the most important information that the people listening to your podcast will hear in their lifetimes. I know it's kind of an extraordinary thing to say, but we expect that this information, this event that I'm talking about, the Day of Declaration, will affect all human beings, everybody who's capable of experiencing, which is everybody technically over the age of 14. So the hearing and hopefully the dissemination of this information will potentially have a life-saving effect on the human race and the planet we're living on. And I would ask anybody who hears this that if the information rings true to you, that you tell others about it to whatever degree that you believe it. If you believe 10%, tell 10%. If you believe 50% of it, tell that much. And if you're not a believing kind of person, I'm actually not that much of a believing type of person, share that portion you think is possible. So if you think any of this information sounds plausible, even to a little degree, share it. So what we're talking about here is a very, very positive event. Not the end of the world, nothing like that. It's an event that will affect all human beings simultaneously. During this time, humanity will experience itself as one, perhaps for the first time. Everybody will experience simultaneously a sacred message and will be given a sacred experience of unity. And this unity and sense of universal love will be brought about by the presence and the voice of a Lord of Love, a great teacher who is well known to us, and that's the Christ himself. Now, some questions may arise in people's minds about this, whether this is similar to Christian expectations about the second coming. And the answer is a qualified no. I think most people expect, at least in Christian conservative circles, that when Christ returns, the world will end, people will be judged, and so on and so forth. But our vision of the second coming is quite a bit different. And in fact, the emergence of Maitreya, who's the Buddhist name for the Christ, they expect Maitreya Buddha to come back and teach the Dharma. In the Hindu tradition, they expect Kalki Avatar. In the Muslim tradition, they expect the Imam Mahdi. And of course, in the Christian tradition, we expect Christ to return. We feel that all of these are different presentations, more or less distorted, of a tremendous event, the emergence of Christ, or Maitreya, and the group that he comes with, who are called the Masters of Wisdom. And they are for everybody. They're not just for the religious. They're those who are there for those of us who are not particularly religious, who may be atheists, agnostics, people of every stripe. In fact, they are aiming to help all of human beings move forward into a more sane and peaceful future. And the most important aspect of their message is we need to begin sharing the world's resources more equally. At the current present time, most of our problems boil down to a lack of unity and a lack of love. We are obsessed with materialism, we're obsessed with personal possessions, and we don't care if people in other countries lack the resources to live decent lives based on that. We continually are running through the resources of the planet at a rate which is completely unsustainable, and it's actually can be proved to be unsustainable if you look at some of the research. So that begs the question, why do we continue to do it? Why do we continue to buy more consumer goods, more luxurious goods, when in fact that has a deleterious effect not just on the planet but on our fellow human beings? It boils down to a lack of love, a lack of awareness, which is, from our tradition, from our point of view of the esoteric teaching or the ageless wisdom, is the same thing as love. Awareness means love, and love means awareness. You can't have love without being aware of other people. So,
it seems like, and we were talking a little bit before we started the show, mm-hmm. It seems like the world and humanity, and I mentioned to you, is just we've lost touch with kindness, yeah. Love, and exactly what you're saying. We're addicted to materialism, and with all the war and chaos. Now, what you're talking about is like a singular event. Is that correct? That will change the consciousness. But that's not like a disaster, like the end of days kind of thing.
No, in fact, it's the beginning of days, the beginning of a new and better time. Not a utopia, of course. We won't have utopia for many thousands of years, but a time in which, when there's there's less fear, there's less sense of mistrust, there's less sense of opposition between ethnic groups, nations, and that's based upon an understanding of the sense of unity. And that will be brought about by the presence of Maitreya and his advice and actually his energy. Since 1977, when Maitreya left the Himalayas and came to London, his energy has been actually filling the world and producing a lot of amazing events. For example, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the rapprochement between the Russians or the communist nations of the world and the United States. Of course, we've seen some backlash, some response to that. So what we can sense is there's a give and take at all times, a sort of, positive change that's wrought by the forces of good and then a response by what you might call evil or aggressive forces. And this happens on a day-to-day, a year-by-year basis. Like a good example, I think, is the Middle East, where you have the Arab Spring, which they had this great outpouring of desire for freedom and for justice and for the rule of democracy and tolerance. In fact, during that time, Maitreya was in Tahrir Square and a lot of those other locations, and helping people and teaching them and inspiring them to move forward in a positive way. But of course, you have the counter response, which is the military conflicts, the rise of ISIS, things like that. So
I did want to say I did receive a message that some listeners showed up late, so I wanted to just kind of mention who we're speaking with again tonight. We're speaking with Mike Annoli, who's a volunteer with Sharon O'National, a nonprofit magazine read over in 70 countries. It reports the progress of the emergence of Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius, and its priorities, realization by humanity of our divine nature, world peace. And so we're basically discussing a singular event that will change the consciousness of humanity, which we are in desperate need of because things are out of control.
Yeah. So let me tell you a bit more about the background of this. So in the Christian tradition, we've expected the emergence of Christ for 2,000 years. And the conception in the Christian churches of the role of Christ and the role of people in transforming the world has been actually relatively narrow. We thought, I think, for many years, especially in the very fundamentalist circles, that Christ would do the work of transforming the world, that somehow our political and economic structures would right themselves, because the world would just go away, and we'd have a better world that would be created like a magic wand or, magic by God and Christ. I think this is not a realistic vision, especially since in the New Testament, Christ talks repeatedly about the need for us to give up our possessions and to trust each other and to share with each other. I would think that if that were not important, that he wouldn't have said that. At any rate, the notion of a returning teacher has been a recurring theme in the various traditions, including Christianity, and has produced, for better or worse, the civilization that we live in right now, that has this great tension that we feel between what we think of as being spiritual and what we see as being material. And the time has now come as the astrological cycle has shifted. I don't know if your listeners may or may not be aware, but our solar system is constantly moving in relationship to other solar systems in the galaxy. And astrologers and people who study that sort of thing describe it as relationships between different constellations. So they feel that right now we have moved from a relationship with the constellation of Pisces into a relationship with the constellation of Aquarius. And according to esoteric teachings of or writings that I've read that are inspired by the Masters of Wisdom, information is correct. And the two constellations have very, very different energies, different impacts upon humanity. The energy of Pisces is very divisive. It's very separative. Although it creates a great deal of idealism, in the end, there's a great division between the spiritual and the material. The wonderful thing about Aquarius is that it brings those two things back together, with the material and the spiritual, or the everyday life and spirituality are brought together in a synthesis. And that means that no longer will spirituality be the domain strictly of churches and people who are taking an approach of idealism strictly, an ideal to aspire to, but a moment-to-moment integration of awareness of self, awareness of the spirit, that untouched and beautiful essence that we all have, and our everyday lives, the life of service, the life of interaction with others, and also relations between nations, economic groups, and so on and so forth. So in the Age of Aquarius, what we have to do is take the ideals that we've crafted during the Age of Pisces and put them into practice. And that is what Maitreya is coming to do right now, to open our eyes, so to speak, to open our hearts to the reality of what spirituality is like in practice, what it means to be a person who is connected to both God and man, who knows the value of both.
And that consciousness change, does that happen over a set time, or
yes,
is it instant? And you said it'll affect everybody, so is it almost like just waking up and having a different feeling?
Yeah, it will. In a certain way, it's both. During the Day of Declaration, everybody will feel Maitreya's energy. Everybody will feel the energy of love and awareness. Will feel that they're connected to God, and yet, at the same time, they maintain their individuality, their spark, their unique contribution, and it's sort of the innocence of childhood, the freedom from care, the freedom from imprisoning memories, although you know, they'll maintain that, but they'll have a sense of communion with God and a communion with spirit, with themselves, that will be altogether new. And after the day, after this half an hour period of time, there will be, I guess, a period of about 2 weeks in which people, the energy of that will sort of carry over, and people will continue to feel it. But after that period is over, of course, things will sort of slip back into the old rhythm, and it will be, what will be evident is that we have to fix our own problems. Our problems won't be fixed by the masters of wisdom. They won't wave a magic wand and make the problems of the world go away. We'll have to create and nourish that sense of unity through practical action. We'll have to begin sharing the world's resources more equally. We'll have to restore the environment. And we'll have to recognize the sacred value of every individual, not just individuals who are individualistic or who worship individualism.
And even the evil people of the world, the dictators and the serial killers, they'll also have this awakening?
Well, not everybody will respond to Maitreya's energy in the same way. Of course, everybody will have sort of similar experiences, but many those who are especially imprisoned by the energy of the past. I don't mean people who are mentally ill, but people who are in a situation who have the most to lose, people who have a huge amount of money and whose money is based upon defense, for example, defense budgets, or people whose money is based upon consumer goods that no one needs, or I'm making exaggeration here, but you know what I mean. People who are devoted to a very conservative and regressive way of looking at things will be very suspicious of Maitreya, and won't like what he has to say. But the vast majority of human beings will respond in the correct way, and that will be what makes the difference.
I would imagine people out there that are living on their coastal mansions and driving their Lamborghinis would be hard to give up such a lifestyle.
Well, you'd be surprised.
For the sake.
You'd be surprised. There are the Warren Buffetts, the Bill Gates. There are actually a majority, but I would think, but a significant minority of very wealthy people that are willing to give it up, that are willing to do what they can to reconstruct the economies of those other countries. You know, one thing I like to say, people like to say, is there is a precedent for this. We have done this before in human history. At the end of the Second World War, there were two plans that were floated for how we would deal with Russia and Japan, or excuse me, Germany and Japan and Europe. One of them was a replication of the World War I reparations thing, which ended in disaster, and it actually ended in the Second World War, and thankfully that was voted down. And the other plan was the Marshall Plan, and what the Marshall Plan did is it took something like, I don't know the exact percentage, but it took a significant percentage of our GDP in the United States, maybe 5 or 6%, and with that money, it reconstructed Germany, Japan, and most of Europe. And within a very short space of time, those devastated countries that had nothing left, nothing, absolutely nothing, just leveled, devastated. They had revitalized economies, and they ended up being some of the great power, the industrial powerhouses of that era, the late 50s, early 60s. And of course, Japan became an industrial powerhouse there, where for many years we went for most of our electronic goods. And Germany is still known for having a tremendous manufacturing sector, that the envy of all of Europe. So that same thing can be done for the devastated, the countries that are devastated by poverty in Africa, for example, and Syria would be a good example in the Middle East. Basically, we have to devote a much larger percentage of our GDP to international aid, and that will make war essentially a thing of the past.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Maitreya, is that considered a spiritual being, a real person, or
good question.
Or is it something that you associate with a belief, or how would people understand who Maitreya is?
Maitreya is a master of wisdom. A master of wisdom is not an incorporeal spirit, somebody that's just a kind of a vision or a cosmic being without a body. Masters of wisdom are human beings who have gone beyond the strictly human stage, who have reached full enlightenment, full immortality. And at this stage, the master of wisdom's consciousness embraces the all. He's aware of past, present, and future. He's aware of the indivisible nature of all creation, of the one life, they say. And,
is it Buddha? Maitreya,
yes,
like Buddha?
It's like Buddha. In fact, Maitreya is a Buddha. There are many Buddhas, but Maitreya is the fifth Buddha according to the Buddhist tradition. There is Gautama Buddha, and in the one of the Buddhist scriptures, they talk about Maitreya Buddha, who will be the Buddha of compassion, who will teach the Dharma and help restore the world. I don't know the exact details of that particular prophecy, but he's talked about. And so a Buddha or an angel or a master of wisdom is a human being like us. They maintain a physical body, although it doesn't die. The difference with their physical body is that it has been transformed into light. It maintains its physicality. I mean, you could touch it, but they can essentially do what they want with it. They can make it disappear and appear somewhere else halfway around the world. They can do anything with it. It's not like a ghost or an apparition, but they have some of that capability.
They're immortal.
They are immortal. They don't
die. That is correct. Wow,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So there are accounts of people who have met the Masters of Wisdom. I think this is important to note because I think people coming to this may think, well, has it been made up? Is this just kind of like a Bigfoot thing? Well, actually, I'm not to put down Bigfoot. People have actually experienced that too and written about it. But you know, they think of it, is this chupacabra or, you know, whatever. Is it something that no one's experienced yet, that's just a theory? No. There is one woman, well, the first woman in the West to actually meet the Masters of Wisdom was a woman named Madame Blavatsky. Blavatsky was a Russian noblewoman, a young woman who was due to have an arranged marriage and kind of scooted out and started traveling the world. Very intelligent, bright lady, kind of a firecracker by popular accounts in the 19th century when she was alive. And she became familiar with the sacred traditions of all the world's people. She went to Egypt and to Syria, to India, to Tibet, and that's where eventually she ended up. She ended up in Tibet, where she studied with three of the Masters of Wisdom. And there's actually a photograph of her, it can be found on the internet, of her sitting, 20, 21-year-old, I don't know her exact age, sitting there. And behind her are three men of just amazing beauty, piercing eyes, and kind of interesting garb. And one's dressed like a European of the century before. That's actually Count Saint Germain. Then you have referred to in the esoteric books as the Master Rakoczy now, because he, during the time of when he was the Count of Saint Germain, his family name was Rakoczy. But there was also the Master Kudhumi and the Master Moria, both of which I think were in Eastern garb, turbans or something, but a traditional garb for the tribe in North India from which they both had come many centuries before. So there are real accounts of them. Another account, which I think is particularly interesting, is Baird Spalding's. And if I can dig up the reference here, The Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East. Yeah, this is Baird Spalding's series of books about his experiences with the masters in Tibet and in the Himalaya. There's also Murdo MacDonald Bain's book, Beyond the Himalayas, similar sort of account. And, of course, the work of Alice A. Bailey and Helena Rorick, who worked on a telepathic level with the Masters of Wisdom and produced volumes of esoteric cosmological material of just amazing detail that I think people who have read the books have become quite certain that no human being could write. No human being could approach the level of consistency and complexity that these teachings are able to embody. So
Mike, we do have...
Go ahead, Jason.
Oh, I was going to say, we do have a caller, but why don't you go ahead, Sherry, first with your question?
Oh, no, go ahead. Let the caller come in. We don't want to lose
okay.
the caller.
Are you ready for a caller, Mike?
Yep. Go ahead.
All right. Hello, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. Hey.
Hey, Jason. How you doing tonight?
Not too bad.
Oh,
how's Alaska?
Alaska right now, the sun is back, which we're very happy for. Today is very windy, but that's okay. We kind of blow some of the dust and stuff away. It's close to springtime, so we're starting to like it. I think we got up to about 45 today.
Good.
Do you have a question for Mike?
I have a ton of questions, and I could probably talk for hours, but I'm going to try to make this as short and sweet as possible.
No problem.
I'm good. Question.
Michael. Hello, Michael.
Yep.
How are you doing this evening?
Oh, very good.
Where are you located at right now?
I'm in Oregon.
Oh, right on, Oregon. Great place to be, no doubt. Is it raining?
Not at the moment, thankfully. We've had some good weather.
Super. So, Maitreya, this is new to me somewhat, so kind of really interested, got me a little excited there. Is this actually an entity or many entities? Is it a religion? Is it a denomination? Or is it a group?
No.
Or how can you just real brief, make it nice and sweet, because I have a ton of things I want to ask you.
Yeah. Maitreya is the head of the spiritual hierarchy. The hierarchy of the masters of wisdom is essentially the spiritual kingdom in nature, just above the human. And it's made up of men and women who have reached the stage of full enlightenment. And I think it's important to note Maitreya embodies the love aspect of our planet. He's the one the Christians know as the Christ. Are you Christian, or is that your background?
I'm very neutral, and there's a reason why I'll tell you about that. I believe I'm more pagan than I am anything, because is actually root of what I feel of everything. And that was going to be another one of my questions, but I want you to go ahead and finish this first one.
Yeah. So there's no sense in the books that I've read or from what I've read of what Maitreya has to say that religion is in any way a block to spiritual realization. In fact, I've got a little quote here. Here's a quote from Maitreya. Actually, Maitreya gave some talks in London between 88 and 92, at which he had people who transcribed what he had to say. And this is one of the things he said. He says, "Anyone at any stage can learn the art of self-realization and find he will enjoy life. Life is to be enjoyed with detachment. Salvation is not in religion, not in politics, not in philosophies or ideologies. It exists in practicing the art of living with a strong sense of detachment."
Okay, so is this an entity that's speaking through a human person, or is this actually a human who is Maitreya? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Maitreya is not. It does occasionally actually overshadow disciples. For example, Mr. Krem gave out some messages between 77 and 8, well, in the 70s, in which Maitreya was speaking through him. But that was through the technique of mental overshadowing. But in this current way he's manifesting himself, he's coming as himself. And that's one of the three ways in which the Christ is returning, both him himself in his person, secondly, through the Christ principle that exists in every human being, and then thirdly, through these overshadowings where he may be speaking through a senior disciple. Let me say one more quote from his. Even when you see me, do not run after me. I have not come to create followers. If you parade me, you do not know who I am. What you experience yourself is your wealth. So he's not come to create a religion of any type.
Sure.
But to facilitate the world's experience of themselves. And I think that's, to me, the thing that speaks most strongly about the authenticity of Maitreya. is that the principle that he embodies is self-realization, not him realizing you or him controlling you in any way, but him facilitating the process of people losing their sense of separation, of sense of alienation, and particularly people's conditioning. So conditioning can be of all different types, but the most oppressive type of conditioning is the conditioning that arises from our sense of separation very early on. Sense that, you know, I belong to a rich family and those other people, you know, I belong to this better religion than the other religions, which are not good, or, you know, that sense of separation, which in the end creates the division, which results in war, which results in poverty, which results in all these awful problems that we have. And people's response to Maitreya's energy, the energy of love and awareness, will create the unity that's being sought. He won't create it. It's us who will experience it and create it ourselves.
Sure, I understand the message. I see that's your message right there, and that's awesome. I feel it's very positive, especially like you're saying with this new constellation. Every 2,000 years, the constellation of Aquarius comes around. I do understand this. I know it's to the Christianity. It's supposed to be, well, according to Revelation, about 2,000 years. There's a tearing or a wait, the bridegroom, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Most of us know this if we were growing up or been in anywhere, you know, especially in the south or southern areas. And I totally understand the message. But Maitreya now, I have studied a lot of different religions and seeing people or talking to people or socializing, especially now that I'm a lot older. I know that paganism was one of the first that was actually really founded. It's one of the most ancient ones that's ever been studied. This has been proven. Yeah. This has been fact. Is Maitreya actually before that? Is he something above Zeus or Apollo or
far,
you know,
far before? And Maitreya first achieved enlightenment probably several million years ago. So this is when history, before the historical period, or what we recognize as history as having existed.
Sure.
You know, European paganism, well, paganism in general, the autochthonous sort of traditional traditions, you know, in Europe, and you know, you can in a certain way talk about the Indian traditions as being native, as having a very unique character that predates the major religions. All of those, in many cases, date back to ancient traditions that existed prior to the historical era. And of course, if you look at it, the teachers that existed before the historical period, like Hermes, like Mithra. Well, Mithra is sort of proto-historical. In the case of the Greek tradition, Hercules. These would have all been manifestations of the world teacher, not Maitreya himself specifically, but people who expressed the wisdom at those ancient periods of time. So it's definitely the case that paganism, and at least the type of paganism that is correct, you know, that's not distorted, you know, is an expression of the wisdom. So the idea in our circles about the wisdom is that it's ageless. The ageless wisdom is that body of knowledge which underlies our very existence, which can be expressed and is expressed in various different ways in different traditions, but is essentially one.
Okay. So it makes a lot of sense because a lot of the different beliefs or religion are made by man or by inspiration of something that inspired man, much like Joseph Smith, Ellen White. I could go on and on all day.
Yeah.
Different types of religions, Ron Hubbard, blah, 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 this guy, that guy. But it all always comes back in all religion to one supreme being or God or person or ruler or you know, mighty one. And what it sounds like here, this would be that Maitreya. Is that correct?
Well, what Maitreya would say. I hate to put words in his mouth, but he is not God. Maitreya is not God. But he expresses the love aspect of divinity. He can, because of the fact that he's the most advanced of the masters, the most evolved of all of them, he's in a sense closest to the heart of the matter of what it means to be a human being. And he can open, he can take us to God, so to speak. And so It's and I don't mean that in a religious sense, that you have to believe in him. It's a matter of the experience of the self inwardly, the experience of the heart, that makes that experience of divinity possible, the sense of non-duality. So when you're talking about an ancient tradition that undergirds them all, I would point to, if you're going to do any reading, the Advaita tradition, which is in Hinduism. And that's, I would think, would be one of the most ancient, because it's so close to the truth, from my point of view, so close to what Maitreya is saying.
That was going to be my next question for you. That was actually going to be my next question for you, Mike, is what group or denomination and or religion person would follow this person or being? Is this a person or a being? I'm still trying to figure that out.
I think that's it's a difficult question because he's both. Now, in the esoteric paradigm, there's the notion that the greater always includes the lesser. What that means is that on every stage of the evolutionary ladder, so to speak, you have the mineral kingdom, the plant, the animal, the human, the spiritual, each one includes the lesser. So lesser, I'm putting that in quotes because it's not lesser. It's simply, it's at a different stage in the evolution of consciousness. So the plant evolution is both, but it also includes, in a sense, the mineral evolution. The animal evolution includes, in a certain sense, some of the characteristics of the two other ones. The human one, we retain the animal body, and yet we have a certain, the capacity to use the mind, which is an addition. So with the masters, they have all of that other, all of that development behind them. They know what it's like to be a human being. They've been there. They've done that. And yet they have this tremendously expanded point of view, which encompasses the whole. And their work has to do, in many cases, with energy on cosmic levels and with the inspiration of human beings in places of importance to betterment.
That's super interesting, Mike. Would this have anything to do with like the spirit molecule or dimethyltryptamine that's found in just about every plant or living thing that comes from the earth?
Yes. I don't know the terminology of the thing that you're talking about, but there is a type of physical matter which is much more intangible and is actually, you find it manifest in a lot of the occult phenomena or ghost phenomena, that type of matter is one in which the masters know how to work with, particularly the highest of the four etheric types of matter they tend to work with. The question again was, would that have something to do with the God molecule?
In just about every living thing that's on the planet.
Right.
This spirit molecule can actually be extracted and made into what's called a dimethyltryptamine, which it is practiced in South America, different places. There are churches out there that have it.
Yeah.
Which is exactly a spirit molecule that'll take you out somewhere and bring you back, man. And it's I've never done it, but I've heard of it.
DMT,
right? I think it's important to realize that from the point of view of esotericism, there's a huge amount that we don't know that's beyond the physical. So you have these molecules and things that are related to these type of life processes, but they're not the sum of it. They're what you might call their reflection of it. The thing of real importance, as far as the body is concerned, is this intangible type of matter that people call dark matter, and that's where the life is. That's where the consciousness is. That's where the life that's in the blood is. And then if you go beyond the physical, you're talking about the astral or the emotional aspect of reality, which is related to magic. And is actually already very well developed in human beings. And then the mental plane above that, which we're just starting to develop. So it's really the mind where it's at right now. The mind is what we're in the process of developing, and we're just starting to get beyond the point where we're trapped in this lower mind with our thoughts, our preoccupations, and starting to understand the unity aspect. And that's where Maitreya comes in.
So was the Dalai Lama, the Dalai Lama, is that what he I shouldn't say worship, but is that what he looks up to, is the Maitreya? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, actually, the Mahayana Buddhists, of which the Dalai Lama is the head, are very much in favor of the. They like the Bodhisattva. I don't know whether they know about Maitreya. I think some of them probably do. I wouldn't be surprised if the Dalai Lama knew. I also wouldn't be surprised if the Pope knew. In fact, for many years, there have been people in the Catholic Church who've known about the presence of Maitreya and communicated that to the Pope. Of course, there are popes that have been more or less receptive, depending. But our current Pope and the current Dalai Lama are both great examples of people who make Maitreya's priorities clear to the public. And whether they know about Maitreya or not specifically is not that important.
Awesome. Well, hey, Tim, I want to thank you for calling in. You had a lot of great questions tonight.
Oh,
yeah,
it's a great topic. It really intrigues me. You know, I was. Can I just want to reiterate one more thing, just a little bit about myself.
Sure.
I came from a very abusive past, a very abusive childhood, was brought up in a boys' home where I had to memorize this King James Bible before I could even get my next meal, with a tube of... forced to do manual labor. None of these things do I ever want pity for, because it taught me to be who I am today. I've seen the most evilest things, and I've seen the most righteous things. I went to Bob Jones Academy. I got a degree in evangelism with a seventh day in the shirt, and none of that is anything that's ever done anything for me other than give me knowledge. This is why I revert to paganism, and or if there is a higher being out there, I'm willing to one day meet that person, if it's Maitreya or whoever, one way or not. If it's to my damnation, it doesn't matter, because I did the best I could with who I am at this point in time in my life. So I can also say that this was very intriguing, this was very interesting, and I can't wait to look into it a little further. Thank you very much for your time, Michael.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Tim.
And for those who are listening, for more information about this, you can visit shareinternational.org. It's got a lot of the information on it. In fact, there is a radio station on the Om Times radio that is doing podcasts about this topic and other related topics every week on Sundays at 1 p.m. It's called Share on the Air Radio. And I'll be speaking next week about some of these related topics as well on that radio station. So,
wow.
Those
awesome.
Are interested.
One question I did have is, now you were talking about like this singular event that's going to help change the consciousness. Now, you said, I believe you said earlier that Maitreya kind of supersedes dualism. And when I look at humanity and the earth, everything has a positive and a negative. Are there any forces out there that are trying to inhibit or prevent this consciousness awakening from happening?
Yes. So the forces of evil, or in Christianity they call it Satan. You know, you can call it whatever you want. They're essentially the forces of materiality. They're a group of beings who are very, very old, very, very highly developed on one line. But they essentially lack the love aspect or consciousness aspect. And they work pretty much exclusively with the Deva kingdom, with one aspect of the Deva kingdom, certain lives on our planet that are in the subterranean areas of the earth, the fires of the planet, so to speak. So the Lords of Materiality work with those fires to keep them contained. But unfortunately, their work overflows onto the human kingdom. So the effect that they have upon human evolution is negative. It tends to hold us back. And for many years, well, for many tens of thousands, if not millions of years, there's been an antagonism between the Lords of Materiality and the Masters of Wisdom, or the Lords of Love. And that's resulted in a slowing down of the evolution of planet Earth, because of human beings' constant attraction to the energy and the promptings and influence of this other group. And right now, the Lords of Materiality, the forces of evil, are tremendously active. They stimulate people who are very separative in nature, who are very selfish, who are very ideological, who are willing to sow hate. And although the group of people are in a minority, because of the fact that they respond, that the the impact of these energies is most potent on the physical plane, we see a lot of chaos and difficulty because of that, even though in the end it's basically fruitless. There's nothing that can really stop the emergence of human beings into the light of brotherhood, in the light of love, in the light of the recognition of our unity. But in the immediate days, weeks, years after Maitreya's emergence, there will be a lot of backlash. There's going to be a lot of contrary movement due to the work of this other group. And I think it's important to note there's nothing that you can really... the best recipe for fighting, so to speak, the Lords of Materiality is to achieve self-realization, to achieve soul awareness. The soul is far more potent than any of those forces, by far. It absolutely dwarfs them. So this is what allows an individual human being, when he achieves soul awareness, to be able to dominate, so to speak, his own personality, to be in control of his own appetites, to be no longer have an anger that gets touched off easily, no longer as selfish, and then as a result of that, of the influence of the soul, the personality, the lower aspect of the self, becomes transformed into an agent of love in the world. So,
is attachment the worst thing that us humans here on Earth have a problem with?
Attachment?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But particularly complacency is almost as bad, because complacency tends to withdraw, even in the very circumstance of the need to serve. Complacency keeps us inside, keeps us not active and demonstrating our spirituality in practice.
So another question. Go ahead. Oh, no, go ahead.
I wanted to read at least one in particular. This is an article that was written by Benjamin Krem's master. So this is a kind of a cool thing. In each one of our magazines, in Share International, a master of wisdom writes an article through Mr. Krem, who's our editor. He's the first person in this group who got in contact with the master, and a master of wisdom, telepathically, and his master then let him know about this, the emergence of Maitreya. But at any rate, in each one of these magazines, a master writes an article, and I'd like to read one for you.
Sure.
So this is an article called "The Creation of Trust." Fear arises when there is a lack of trust. Few there are who trust their fellow men. Thus men have for long lost the sense that they are one. Brothers and sisters all, engaged in the tasks of life together, sharing these tasks for the common good, and sharing, too, the wherewithal for each one's needs. The rediscovery of this common heritage will galvanize humanity and awaken it to its destiny, the creation of a way of life in which men become co-creators with God. It is Maitreya's task to remind men of their heroic destiny and to persuade them that the act of sharing will engender the trust they seek. He will show that sharing is no longer an option, a choice, but the inevitable consequence of their realization that humanity is one. That's a quote from one of those. I've got some more, too. I've got a ton more.
Yeah, if you got some other good ones, go for it.
I really do. This is a quote. This is one quote from Maitreya himself when he was speaking through Mr. Krem during one of the 140 messages that Maitreya 140 messages that he gave through Mr. Krem during news conferences back in the late 70s and early 80s, between 77 and 82. There we go. "Very little time, indeed, now separates me from you in full vision. Mankind will see me very soon. And if they follow me, I shall lead them forward into the future which awaits them, a future bathed in the light of truth, of harmony, and love. My friends, I would ask you to help me, to take upon yourselves a share of the burden of preparation. If you can accept that I am here, make known this fact wherever you find a listener. It may be that you will see me without knowing me. It may be that you will walk the other way. But if this be so, you will forfeit a treasure unlike that which you might build in 1,000 lifetimes. Make it your task to tell men that I am here, that I am working for them, for their future, for the future of all men and all things in the world. So,
those are pretty powerful messages.
Yeah, you can read some of them online. There's three ebooks that you can download for free on our website. That's www.share-international.org. One is the Ageless Wisdom Teaching, which goes over the esoteric tradition and the tradition of the work of the Masters of Wisdom in the modern era. The World Teacher for All Humanity, which talks about Maitreya. And there's two others whose names I'm not coming on very easily. But
now I've got to ask, since if there are these lower energy forces or entities that are pulling one direction and this positive consciousness change with Maitreya going the other direction, it kind of feels like as humans on this planet that we're kind of pawns in some game. I mean, essentially my question is, why are we here? Why are we even involved in this tug of war? And is it just to become enlightened and become a master? Or
human beings have an incredibly important role to play on this planet, and not just us, but every kingdom in nature is vitally important for the other kingdoms for the other kingdoms to exist. So the way the energy in the universe works, it descends from what you might call God or the universe through the various kingdoms in nature until it reaches the human. Then through the kingdom, the human kingdom, it reaches the animal and plant kingdoms. So if the human kingdom were not here, the plant and animal kingdoms would very quickly cease to exist. They'd essentially starve from lack of energy. So there's this constant transmission, retransmission of energy that's happening between the various kingdoms in that way. And likewise, on the return journey, animals, when they achieve a certain state of awareness of their being, awareness of mind, they individualize and become human beings. This happens very, very slowly over many tens of thousands of years, and I've heard it happens through our pets, for example. Our pets, when they, as they have lots of experiences of being a pet, eventually they will become a human being. They'll take the first step into becoming a human being, a human being on its first incarnation. So likewise, human beings, as we become more and more evolved, we get much more close to the spiritual kingdom in nature, the one immediately above us, and achieve a state of being of service to the all, to the other kingdoms in nature, and to what you might call God. So what would be our purpose on this planet? Essentially to spiritualize, because we're potentially aware of the spirit, we have the capacity to think, we have the capacity to understand the whole. Our sacred task might be described as spiritualizing the matter of this planet. So this gets back into the question of what the relationship or the tug of war that's happening between the forces of evil and those of good, or matter and spirit. I think good and evil doesn't really adequately describe, because the difference between these two groups, because the lords of materiality, are their activity isn't always evil. It just happens that some of it is, and it's responsible for a lot of the negativity we experience. Of course, there's a tremendous amount that's human beings' own choice. We make a lot of really, you know, trial and error choices that happen to be wrong, and as a result, we put ourselves in rapport with these forces. It's not as if they're hunting us down, trying to corrupt us all the time. We do the majority of it ourselves, their own mistakes. But the tug of war is essentially between the tendency of matter to be inert, to not want to be spiritualized, and also the tendency to materialize, to spiritualize. So the forces of materiality tend to be that tug of war in the opposite direction, to resist the force of evolution. And that's, it's essentially, when it's done correctly, it tends to produce the regressive or conservative aspects of society. So people who are, you know, conservative in nature are responding in certain point in a certain way to the inertia aspect of matter. But when it gets too inert, when it resists the forward flow of time too much, it causes an imbalance, and that's what we're seeing now, is an overflow of evil such that we're too resistant to the concept of unity, the concept of brotherhood and love. So we've maintained these economic structures, which are essentially of the past 2,000 years. They don't belong in our current era. And likewise with certain aspects of the political systems. So.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I've always been interested in trying to figure out where my place in is this world. And I've talked to a bunch of guests before, and I don't know. I guess I just don't truly understand the purpose of, you know, but it's one of the great mysterious questions. Everybody wants to know why we're here, and I guess that makes as much sense as anything else. But we do have a few minutes left, and we talked a little bit before the show, and you had mentioned UFOs.
Yeah.
So I wanted to give a couple minutes where you could tell us where that fits in or doesn't fit in with the whole thing, because as the listeners know, that's my primary area of interest because I've had so many UFO encounters.
Yeah. Well, the role that the UFOs play in our evolution is positive. Generally speaking, according to the information I get from Mr. Krem, from Share International, the UFOs are mainly from Venus and Mars, some small number from Jupiter and other ones in our solar system. But they're really either none or extremely small number and none at the present time in history that come from other solar systems. And essentially, the matter or the life that exists on Mars and Venus is not visible to the naked eye. It's physical. I mean, it's fully physical, but it's immaterial. It's invisible to our current eye, to our eyes, and also to the current instrumentation that we have. It exists in that area of matter that scientists call dark matter. So, if you had dark matter goggles and you went to Mars, you'd see plants and trees and men and edifices and gigantic factories that make spaceships, apparently, among other things, and very unusual-looking men. And same thing if you were to go to Venus. You'd see men that, again, look different than we do, but, again, trees, plants, an environment, even though, according to the spacecraft that go to Venus, there could be no possibility for life. There actually is. So the men on those planets are, especially in the case of Venus, extremely evolved, much more evolved in most cases, especially on Venus, than men here. The most advanced of those men go in crafts and do a lot of work in our environment to help us. Particularly, they offset the effects of nuclear radiation that's emitted from the various nuclear power plants and nuclear tests that we do, which would otherwise make life very difficult on planet Earth. It's a type of etheric radiation that scientists are not aware of at the moment that affects the immune system. So they go and clean up both those nuclear pollutants and other persistent pollutants in our environment, and that's a major service that they do. They also appear to people. They and you know, lights in the sky. And these appearances are actually increasing year by year, more and more frequency, more dramatic displays. And the crop circles are another interesting example of their work. They produce these amazing patterns on cornfields or wheat fields in the south of England, particularly the south of England, every year. And they're deeply symbolic. They have deep meanings which are capable to be understood by our intuitions, spark those intuitions into movement. And apparently what they're doing with the crop circles is bringing down onto our Earth's, onto the physical plane, certain magnetic vortices that are already in our Earth's magnetic field, which you might call a crossing of ley lines. And when they're producing these crop circles, it will have the effect, apparently, of facilitating a future type of technology, a power center, if you will, at those spots that will produce large amounts of power from the sun. direct from the sun more efficiently than solar panels and other things we have now.
I was going to say, well, we're about out of time. And did you have more to add on that today?
I was just going to say, I would like to end with a message by Maitreya, if you don't mind.
Sure. Absolutely. Okay. Actually, before you do that, we do have a question online. Can I present that to you really quick?
Yes, please.
The question is, when Maitreya comes back, will the Christians or Christianity say that it is the Antichrist?
In the most conservative Christians, the ones who are dyed-in-the-wool literalists, will, in the beginning, yes, claim that Maitreya is the Antichrist. The reason for this is not that Maitreya is the Antichrist. He is not. In fact, if you look at John and a lot of the other scriptures, it's clear that they're talking about a destructive person, like Nero. Nero is an example of the Antichrist back then. Then you had Hitler and other figures more recently who were very divisive and race-baiting and things like this. That's the Antichrist. But for modern Christians, they will find it very difficult to accept Maitreya's return because they have a notion that Scripture has to be fulfilled literally, which is kind of silly because, you know, from my point of view, because Jesus didn't fulfill Scripture literally. there will be Christians who will claim that he's the Antichrist because there's a notion that there will be someone who will be like the Christ but will not be the Christ. So, for some Christians, it will be very difficult to accept. But Maitreya loves them too, and eventually, over a period of 40 or 50 years, the truth will enter into their minds that he couldn't possibly be the Antichrist because they haven't been persecuted yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are out of time, but before we close with that quote, I wanted to give you another opportunity to throw out the website and any other way to contact you if people had any further questions.
Yes, the website is www.share-international.org. We have a talk radio presence on OM Times. That's the Share on the Air radio. You can hear lots more podcasts about this there. And my name is Mike Nolley. I'm a volunteer out of many volunteers with Share. So I'll end with one of the messages that was given through Mr. Krem from the Christ, from Maitreya.
Great.
So here we go. Nothing separates you from me, and soon many will realize this. I am with you and in you. I seek to express that which I am through you, for this I come. Many will follow me and see me as their guide. Many will know me not. My aim is to enter into the life of all men and through them change that life. Be ready to see me soon. Be ready to hear my words, to follow my thoughts, to heed my plea. I am the stranger at the gate. I am the one who knocks. I am the one who will not go away. I am your friend. I am your hope. I am your shield. I am your love. I am all in all. Take me into yourselves and let me work through you. Make me part of yourselves and show me to the world. Allow me to manifest through you and know God. May the divine light and love and power of the one and holy God be now manifest within your hearts and minds. May this manifestation lead you to know that God dwells silently now and forever within you all.
Wow.
Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mike, for coming on Paranormal Horizons tonight and teaching us a little bit about Maitreya. It's new to me. I've never heard of this, so I want to thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and I'd love to come on again.
We'd love to have you back. And I'd actually love to get you back so we could spend a little bit more time talking about UFOs.
Talking about UFOs. I would love to. Whenever you
love
want.
That. All righty. Great. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thanks, Jason. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Sherry.
Hey, that was very interesting. It's a different guess, isn't it?
Well, you know, anything that promotes positivity and a positive message is definitely worth listening to. As you know, I am a skeptic, but you really can't go wrong if you're spreading a positive message, because with all the craziness out in the world, it's just getting worse. And so I truly hope it's correct that there's going to be a change in consciousness, because You know, Lord knows we need that, because if you look at the news and what's going on in the world, especially overseas, it's people are out of control, and people have totally become so disconnected with one another. You know, the first response is, oh, let's just bomb people or shoot people, and it's out of control, and it has to change.
It is, definitely, and I like the philosophy of world peace and love. I think that's the ultimate as far as being able to help absolve some of these problems that we have in this world.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So anybody listening out there, do something nice for a random stranger. It really makes you feel good. And what do we got going on next week?
Well, we may have a guest. I'm not sure, but anyway, we may have a guest, or we just might wing it and just go and do open lines and have some discussions of things that we haven't been able to discuss on the radio show. So that would be interesting. We'll see what happens, but definitely we will have open lines in the next week or the next 2 weeks. And we are coming up in the 100th episode. Is that correct, Jason?
That is. I need to double check that, but we are, I think, a couple episodes away from that. So we definitely need to get on that. I wish I wasn't so busy.
I know. We're going to have to make time and definitely celebrate. For some reason, we're going to have to. That is something very special to celebrate and have viewer and listener support. That would be awesome.
Yeah, so we'll get on that. I'll make some time to, and we'll get together and figure that out. And I always like it when we have open lines. It's kind of fun. We can talk about some stuff that's going on out there. But, do you have anything else?
Nope, I have nothing else to say. And I just hope everybody has a good, really good week, and take care of yourself and try and not be around sick people.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh,
I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in tonight. Thank Mike Nulli, volunteer of Share International, teaching us a little bit about Maitreya. Thank our dedicated listener, Tim, up in Alaska. It's always a pleasure when he comes to field some questions for our guests. And, yeah, we'll see everybody next Sunday, usual time, 8 p.m. West Coast time, and hope everybody has a great week. Good night, everyone.
Thank you, everybody, and don't be afraid to call in and participate. We'd love to have you.
Absolutely. Good night.
Take care. Good night. Bye-bye, everybody.